Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 238 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Ford Maverick, the Kia EV6 and Carnival, the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, the VW ID Buzz is back. GM, PG&E, and Ford are testing bi-directional charging. Honda and Sony team up for EVs. Rivian is still struggling with production. And no more gas Subaru STIs. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 238 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam with Wheel Sam from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland, and this week we will say Roadshow by CNET. That's for them.
Ooh, I am Roberto Baldwin, and wait, Tom's Guide. I'm for Tom's Guide. I just did a big thing for them. In fact, I'm half finished with the big thing I'm doing for them. So yeah, Tom's Guide.
And welcome back, Robbie.
Yeah.
Hope you're feeling better.
I'm feeling much better. Don't get migraines, kids. They're debilitating. Migraines are the.
They're not good.
They're not good.
All right. Well, since you didn't get to talk last week, let's start with you then.
Oh, no. Okay. So let's first talk about the Ford Maverick. I love the Ford Maverick, the little truck from, the little pickup. I had the Lariat, but it had the hybrid. It's early because of time change. Let's start over. Yeah. I had the Ford Maverick. It was awesome. It had the hybrid. I was in the Lariat package. I drove it around. I threw 800 pounds of rock in it twice. It drives great. I did some 3D printing for it. I cut down a bunch of wood and shoved it in the back into all those little
slots. Did you print your cup holder that you used in the video?
I did. I printed that. I was printing a box that had Engadget written on it because I did the article and the video for Engadget. And so I designed a box and I was printing it, and then my 3D printer was just getting all weird, and I was like, oh, I need to like take it apart and clean out the nozzle, and I was like, okay, I don't got time for this anymore. So, but if I had a Maverick, you could just sort of print anything for all over the place. And I had pitched it as a nerd truck, and then once I got it, I ended up liking it way more than I anticipated. I averaged about 38.5 miles per gallon in a pickup. So driving around
800 pounds of rock in the back. I mean, that's
with rocks in the back. Yeah. Just buying rocks.
And also, you didn't carry mulch. I feel like that's still a fail.
I didn't get any mulch. I don't know what, we need mulch, but I think we're in the middle of planting everything. So there's no point in getting mulch because you're just going to have to like move it and dirt gets on top of it. And then it gets, yeah. So we're not quite to the mulch yet because we're doing a lot of planting where the mulch goes. So.
I couldn't even do planting. We had snow yesterday. I think the ground is still frozen solid, except where it's a foot of mud that you step into unwittingly.
You can get one of those.
It's snowing right now here, so.
Is it snowing? Yeah. Oh, God.
You can get a post hole digger, you know, those giant drills. You and a friend.
Those don't
what are you guys doing this week?
Those don't work great when the ground is still frozen. You really need to wait for it to thaw out, even because they're not really sharp enough.
Okay. See, it seems like Sam's tried this. He's like, we got to dig a hole.
Sam, it sounds like the voice of experience. Hey, guys, just in case you're considering doing this.
You're curious. It's no. So back to the Ford Maverick. I think I said in the video, I did say in the video that I do not care for regular cruise control. I don't care about it. I don't ever use it. I've had it in a lot of cars.
Oh my gosh, neither do I. Everybody loves cruise control. Little virtual high five. I never use cruise control.
Adaptive cruise control I'll use in traffic. But cruise control is just, I don't know.
Well, once you've gone adaptive, going back to just plain old cruise control that does nothing but hold you at a constant speed really seems like, why? Why did they ever do this?
Dark ages.
People are like, well, what if you're on a long drive? I'm like, I don't know. I just leave my foot there, I guess. Long drive, like I have bad ankle. I used to skateboard when I was young. So my ankles are like peppermills. When you move them, they like crack.
Ew.
So on a long drive, sometimes, you know, maybe once or twice, I will set cruise control so I can like, you know, sort of stretch my right ankle, and then I turn it right back off. So if I'm driving for like 7 hours, I'll use cruise control for a grand total of 45 seconds. I think the Ford Maverick is best served as I only need these couple things, and everything else I don't need. It is a utilitarian, awesome vehicle. You can just, I was like, you know what? The only thing you should really get, the bedliner. The little spray and bedliner, so you don't scratch it.
So you don't destroy your vehicle.
Because when you're shoving that wood in and out, you know, the wood gets, you know, and I accidentally cut a piece of a 2x9 instead of 2x6 to put into the back. And there wasn't, you have to sort of like angle the wood in order to get into the slot. And so in order to angle to get in the slot, I end up kind of scratching up the top part of the inside of the bed, the little plastic part. Then trying to get it out was like a 15 minute fiasco of just like,
that's where you take the Sawzall and just cut the wood in half again.
Yeah. Right in the bed. Yeah. Neighbors are like, what's he doing? Oh God, he's going to lose a finger. It's a great little truck. Good luck probably getting one, because every time I talk about it or someone retweets whatever, you know, what I said about it, everyone is like, yeah, I got mine on order. Oh, I got mine on order. I had someone follow me. I was on the freeway. I was going to Treasure Island where we did the video shoot. And off the freeway, off the Bay Bridge, they followed me off that. And then they followed me on to Treasure Island. And then they followed me to the parking lot of where I parked.
Can I buy that off you?
To just look at it. They had ordered one. This person, you know, he's like, I have a Tacoma. He's like, I do woodworking, so I have that. But my wife wanted something. We wanted a truck. This seems great. And then I showed it to him. I'm like, yeah, I really like it. He's like, oh, yeah, this looks awesome. He was very happy, got back on his motorcycle and rode away.
You know,
he didn't murder me.
It would sound crazy, except when I was at the Chicago Auto Show, they had a Maverick there, obviously. And I had someone who lived in New York tweet me when I mentioned something about it, saying, is that just there for you guys as media, or is it there? And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure all that's here is here. You're going to see what you see. He's like, I'm thinking of going there just so I can see it, because I have one on order and I haven't actually seen it yet. Like, yeah. Can I really see it? I'm like, well, I guess if you want to drive to Chicago, but this guy's ready to drive Chicago. He lived in New York. Yeah. That's some serious commitment to like, well, I probably should check this out before I wait however long. He didn't say how long the wait was, but I guess long enough that you felt like, I want to make sure I want it. I'm going to drive Chicago first.
My next door neighbor ordered one in early October and had not actually seen one in person yet. And when I had one here for a review in November, mid-November, you know, he and his wife came over and they were really anxious to take a look at it. And I took them for a drive in it. And, you know, so that was they hadn't had a test drive even, you know, hadn't ordered one because they just thought it was so cool and they loved it. And, you know, they got theirs in early January and it's fantastic. They got the bright blue color? I forget.
Arctic Blast or something. I think that's a Slurpee flavor, actually.
Yeah. But they got that bright blue color, which I think is a great color.
Bright blue color doesn't cost anything. Yeah, Velocity, those colors, they don't cost anything. You can get the XL, like the cheapest one, and get that bright blue, and it's free. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, they got a Velocity Blue XL hybrid. Yeah, you know, it's like 20 grand plus, you know, delivery and tax, and that's it.
Have any of you ever ordered a car like that? Like ordered something, you haven't seen it, you haven't driven it, you haven't set hands on it. You're good.
No, I can't. I can't. That's not. Yeah, that doesn't work in my brain.
That's what I mean. I can't even fathom doing that. I can fathom ordering something that I maybe have not had as much time in as I want. Like I saw it, I checked it out, I love it. It sets my heart to Twitter. I'm going to get it. But just like, it looks really good in that picture. Here's my money.
It took 3 months for me to order this 3D printer. Because I went to like my friend who works at Make Magazine, and I made him give me information. I did all this for the 3D. It's like $300. So I can't.
So you're not going to exactly make that commitment for $20,000.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I'm fortunate that you know I have this job. So if I do like something, I get to eventually drive it, typically before other people. Yeah, but you know, it's a $20,000 car. So I'm like, okay. So it has all these little things, but it's probably not going to drive very well. No, it drives great. Front-wheel drive truck, though, that's awesome because it rained here while I had it, and I think everyone who owns a truck and rear-wheel drive truck knows what happens when you're in the rain in a truck is every time you put on the gas, you get a little tail slide, you get a little some, and none of that because all the weight's up front, you know, the motor's up front, the whole, yeah, it was great, it was wonderful, I really liked it, I liked, yeah, it was, I went in expecting to like it. I went out thinking, man, maybe we should buy one of these. So that's, yeah, that's because I was like, well, you know, we do a lot of stuff and, you know, we're using the Jag and we could put the dogs in the back and in the back
seat.
Yeah, I mean,
there's room in the back seat for the dogs.
Yeah, they just sit in the back seat of the Jaguar. So,
you know, you still have your mulch and your stones in the bed.
Yeah. So yeah.
And the, you know, because the Maverick, you know, is, it's all, I mean, you know, It's hard plastics. We're not talking premium materials here.
Right.
But it's going to be durable. You know, you've got tough fabric seats. You know, that the dogs, it's going to stand up to the dogs without any problem.
But you know what? As cheap as it, I mean, is not like luxury as the inside is. I think they honestly did a really good job with it, though. Like, it doesn't look cheap. It doesn't look like a luxury car, but it doesn't feel like, oh, Lord, everything in here is the cheapest possible plastic that a human can get away with putting in a car without some regulator saying that doesn't count. You know, like it feels decent. The trims are attractive. Yeah. Even if they're not fancy. And I love the in the center console, I'm trying to remember, there's a piece where like you can stick like, you know, your keys or whatever you're going to toss in there. And there's like a little rubber thing that you can actually pull entirely out.
Oh, yeah. That little air thing.
That little thing. And I'm like, that's actually like, not that it's a high-end thing, but it's like you could have just made it a piece of molded rubber that didn't move, and now it's a pain in the butt to clean. Nope, you can take this out. You can tidy things up. You can put it back in. It gives you a little traction so things don't rattle around in there, and they sit in this nice little... That's a small little thing, but it improves your quality of like, your ride because you're not listening to stuff jangle around inside of there. It's cheap.
It's basic, but solid.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. It doesn't have, like, when the first-gen Nissan Kicks, like, the door panel was just a slab of plastic. and you get in this, and it's like, you know, they molded and they added a little, you know, design flair to it.
Well, and they have the cutouts and the armrests and the doors so you can fit big water bottles in there.
Yeah, you can throw your giant water bottles in there in case you, you know, we start rationing water and you need to start selling it for trading it for gas or whatever.
You can trade. Yeah, it's cheap. Yeah, that's the way you actually ration your gas. I have a jug full of gas.
A little jar of gas. It's a Mad Max mobile. Yeah. And then, you know, and I talked to this guy, Robert Trapp, about, you know, he designed, or he before Ford put out their CAD drawings, which, by the way, are very difficult to deal with if you're just used to using like STLs for 3D printing. He had already designed like the little plug that goes in there. So I end up just using his stuff. But yeah, he's like, yeah, I made this and this, and there's a Nintendo Switch holder, and he created like a wireless charger for a phone. And no, there's all these like cool little things. And because they've sort of opened it up to all, you know, saying, hey, here's this FIT system, this Ford integrated tethering system. So now I just said FIT system. because they
it's
opened
like
it up.
ATM machine.
Yeah. It's like when you say ATM machine. Because they opened it up to the makers, they started, you know, 3D printing other things. Because I already have the vehicle, I'm already making something for it. So that little cubby hole that's next to the infotainment screen, like someone's created something that you can, you know, use fits for that. Or people are just going to keep making things for this vehicle, and so you have this really robust maker scene behind it that is sort of growing as more and more people buy this vehicle. And yeah.
I'd be curious to see if Ford incorporates that same kind of slot into other future vehicles.
I think they should. It seems
it's not like it's a complicated high tech.
Yeah, I mean it's just a, you know, changing the mold
right into your car. Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like something that, since it's been so well received, it would make sense. Like
Bronco would be great for that, to incorporate some of those slots.
And all that stuff that you want to put in your Bronco. Think about all the cool things people would come up with if they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bronco and the Wrangler just are just bases for crazy add-ons.
All the crazy stuff. Like, okay, here's what's going to hold all my stuff. Wait till you see how I do.
I bought a shovel that I'll never use. So I'm going to put it on here.
I have a foldable shovel that folds in 18 different spots. And once it's open, I can never get it closed like a map, but it fits.
I got this all shovel. Right.
So I have a question for you. You had the Lariat, which is the top trim level.
I had the Lariat.
XLT and Lariat. How much was it?
It was, oh, darn. You know, I should have looked this up. I'm sorry, Holt. Now you got to give me 2 seconds. It had it was the Lariat, but it had the hybrid. And it had the spray-in bed liner, which I think, you know, if you're going to get anything, that's the thing to get. It had cruise control, which, you know, whatever. And Monroney. I probably could have just looked at my article, but no.
Because the Lariat starts at like $26,000.
Oh, so this one, it's the MSRP for the Lariat was $25,490. It had the floor, and it had some non-carpeted mats. It had the spray-in bed liner, which is $500, and then it had Ford Copilot 360, the additional stuff, so that it has, like, when you're backing up, it yells at you, and it sort of helps you stay in your... what do you call it? Lane. Again, it's early. That was $540. And then a delivery is like $1,500, the destination. So that's a lot of money. Anyway, at the end of the day, it was $27,660.
Okay, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, so that's not too bad. So if you really want to go like add a bunch of like just random things to it, you can. I am very pro, like get the XL. Who cares about cruise control? And get the spray in bed liner and then just be done with it and just roll around on Steelies. You can get any color. All the colors are free.
Yeah. Because, I went through and priced out, you know, just to see how high you could get a Maverick. Yeah. And if you take a Maverick with the 2-liter EcoBoost and all wheel drive and all the options, you can get it up into the mid 30s. And, yeah, I don't know that I would necessarily pay, you know, $35,000 for a Maverick.
Because then you're looking at a Ridgeline, and you're like, Ridgeline has bigger, more space.
Yeah, you know,
Ridgeline.
Even a 27, I think it's still, you know, I think it's a really good value. I still think, you know, kind of XLT with, you know, Copilot 360 is kind of the sweet spot, and that's what I had. That was like 24 and a half, something like that. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot. And, it, you know, usually, you know, with Ford trucks, XLT is usually that's the one that's kind of the best combination of value and features.
It's the Goldilocks version.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are probably going to get the XLT. Again, even though I'm the tech guy, that's like my jam. I'm like, you don't need all this stuff. I'm like, you can just plug in your phone. It has... You can use Android Auto. You can use CarPlay.
Even the base, you know, the XL at $20,000, you get, you know, the 8-inch touchscreen infotainment with Android Auto and CarPlay support. You know, so you don't really need to do anything else.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's what you're going to do anyway. So, bam.
So you got navigation with that. So, yeah.
Done and done. So yeah, Ford Maverick, big fan. I feel like it's going to be super difficult to get a hold of one now. Because A, people like them, and B, now that the price of gas has gone up, and we also have, of course, the fact that, you know, we have chip shortages and supply chain issues, and now there's a war, and it's just, it's...
Well, I think that they've stopped taking orders for 2022 models. Because they've, you know, the order book's full, you know, so now at some point in the next few weeks or a month or so, they'll start taking orders for 2023s.
I really hope that this sort of gets under the skin of a lot of other automakers. And then I know we have the Santa Cruz, which is great. But I think there other automakers need to kind of look and be like, oh, we've sort of ignored this, like, this entire segment for years. And it turns out people have really wanted. I would have people before the Ford Maverick was announced, and I was like, this is when I worked at Car Driver. I work at Car Driver. Like, why can't I get a small truck? I just want a small truck. I'm like, well, there's original. No, I mean smaller. Like, you remember the 90s? You get a small truck. Well, I'm like, yeah. They're like, why can't I get a small truck? And I'm like, I don't know, because it seems like you and a bunch of other people want that.
Well, all through college, I drove an 84 GMC S15, you know, which was even, you know, smaller than this. You know, and it was one of those stripper models. You know, it was just a regular cab, came from the factory with the bench seat, no air conditioning, manual crank windows, you know, no radio. You know, it had I put in a radio and eventually found a set of bucket seats from a scrapyard and put those in. You know, but you know, had the manual transmission, and actually I did put cruise control on that because I had to do a lot of long drives back and forth.
Did you get it from the factory, or did you get the J.C. Whitney one?
Well, it wasn't J.C. Whitney, but it was an aftermarket system that, you know, I had to install an actuator on the throttle cable and put a little magnet on the drive shaft and set up the little pickup so I could figure out what the speed was and calibrate it and everything.
Did it have a little dial in the car, like a little box with the dial? Yeah, I remember
that. It was actually one that clamped onto the turn signal stock.
Oh, that's fancy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but, you know, that's back in the 80s, that was the sort of thing we did, you know.
Because yeah, we didn't. There were no
laws. A lot of cars didn't come with those kinds of features.
The idea that I think people don't realize who are buying cars now who weren't around, cars just didn't have air conditioning. Like, you had to pay money for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you wanted to be cold when it was hot outside, you had to pay a lot of money. And most people just like, nah, I just rolled down the window.
Yeah.
What else did I drive? Oh, I drove the Kia EV6. This is the second time I did the first drive. I did a review of it for The Verge, and it is still outstanding. It's just such a great little EV. I'm going to keep calling it a wagon. They're going to call a crossover. I like to think that it's a return of wagons, and it's a wagon EV, and I can't say enough nice things about it. It is just, it's comfortable to ride around in. It's great. You know, it rides well. I feel like people are, I think this feels like this is sort of some contention. Some people think the EV6 rides better, rides better than the Ioniq 5. I think it's the other way around. I think the Ioniq 5 has less body roll, but having driven both, but then some friends are like, no, I think the EV6 rides better, and I think the Ioniq 5 has more body roll. So now I feel like I have to get both of them in at some point.
Get them at the same time.
Do you think, have you driven both of them yet, Sam?
I have not yet driven the EV6. I didn't get to go to the drive, and they haven't had them in the local fleet yet. So hopefully, I'll get those soon.
I like the EV6. I think I like the EV6 better of the two. I think I'm trying to think. I'm like, do I remember a significant difference between them though? Is there a significant difference? Do you think?
Mechanically,
they're identical.
Yeah, yeah. They're like the same car. But, right. And it really comes down to which, and again, this is me driving very fast on very technical roads with that EV6 mm-hmm. drive program. Remember,
right. You were on
a that was like, I'm like, what? This is this is a Stinger drive program.
I'm like, this is an odd choice for this vehicle, but it was
a fun drive.
It was very fun, but it did make you work for it. Like, it's a Hyundai, the Ioniq 5 was not as technical. So
you're just kind of cruising around Southern California.
La, 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 la. Right. So it was a little different. So, very different drive programs.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, maybe if I'd had the Ioniq 5 on those roads, I would have maybe been the same. Maybe it would have been less. Who knows? Either way, I feel like either one you buy, you're going to be happy. It really comes, and I think it really comes down to design. Like, what do you want?
Because the styles are very different. You know what I love? That the Ioniq 5, all the little, what do they call them? Pixels, little squares, little teeny tiny squares everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think some part of it makes me feel like I've sat down in a 1985 video game or something, all these squares
of Minecraft.
I like how that looks, just because I think it also looks, it just looks different. I love how it looks on the outside of the car. Like, it's strikingly different. It's unique. I'm like, that appeals to me. It makes it stand out a little bit from the crowds.
So. Yes. Yes. I think
the Hyundai Motor Group. All the other crossovers.
Exactly. Yeah. And it looks like a 90s hatchback, pixel, retro.
Yeah.
Futuristic vehicle. It's
fun. I like
it. Yeah, it looks like a design student who was like at top of the class designed a car, and everyone's like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, they'll never make it. And then Hyundai's like, hold on.
Like, wait, hold on. Yeah, we'll
hold my for you. Hold my beer. I got this. Yeah, it is lots of, if you have a family, lots of leg room for a tall person in the back. Mm-hmm. Plus, you still have room for to throw your stuff in. Both of these vehicles are much bigger than you think they are. The EV6 is about the same size as the 3 Series.
They're very TARDIS-like. They look very small. And then you sit down and say, like, there's a lot more room in here than you think there is. When I had to sit in the back seat for a while on the Hyundai program I was on, and the front seat was pushed all the way back. Someone was trying to do video, and I was kind of like hiding.
Like
your passenger side as far back in the right corner as you can get in the back of the car. And he had the seat pushed all the way back, and he's just thinking, like, gosh, sometimes you are actually squished. And I'm like, I'm totally fine back here. This is fine. And you would never drive with the seat that far back unless you were a giant. Well, you might, Rob, Roberto.
Normal people wouldn't. That's my little caveat whenever I talk about research. Well, if you sit behind a tall person, it's going to be tough. Yeah. But I had the EV6. I had the seat all the way back for me, and I got in the back seat, and I didn't have to move my seat forward or anything. And I was like, oh, this is great. And then I put the little
seat
back.
Very roomy. You look like, oh, these might be a little bit small. No, open the door, take a seat.
It's an optical illusion. The wheels are pushed out really far, and then it's the design. So it's sort of, it tricks you. Even when you're in front of it, until you get right up, like super close to it, it still seems smaller than it is.
Much smaller than
it is. Trick.
And for what it's worth, the EV6 actually is, it's strangely enough, when you look at it in isolation, it actually looks like it might be a little bigger than the Ioniq 5. The Ioniq 5, because of its shape, looks smaller. But the EV6 is actually smaller. It has about 4 inches less wheelbase than the Ioniq 5, which is, it's still, 114-inch wheelbase. It's still... That's big. A lot of wheelbase for car that size, but it is marginally smaller than the Hyundai.
We got into the EV6 and we were driving around. My wife, we got in and she's like, oh, this is really nice. I'm like, yeah, this is the same. It's the Ioniq. She hasn't seen the Ioniq 5 yet, and she's like, well, why didn't we get this? Like within like a few minutes, and most of the time she gets into a car, she's like, yeah, this is fine, whatever. She just
doesn't care.
But when she likes the car, And I'm like, well, it wasn't ready yet. She's like, oh, all right. Okay. And she likes her. I'm like, do you not like your car? She's like, no, I like my car. This just seems way better.
If I'd known I could get this.
She's like, what is this? I thought you were a car guy.
I would have made do with that X-Type for a few more months if I could have gotten this instead.
That's a whole. Getting trapped in a bad neighborhood at 1 a.m. doesn't make it for. Yeah, the X-Type is the X-Type. It is what it is. So anyway, yeah, I was fortunate. I drove two really nice cars, two cars I really like, two cars that, again, I'd probably go with the Ioniq 5 just because of design. But, same thing. So we'll see. Good times.
Great. Nicole, what about you?
Yeah. The car I drove is worth more than both of the cars that Robbie drove put together. Two or three times over. I was in...
Maybe twice.
You could buy many, several of those or one of these. The 2022 Jeep Grand Wagoneer Series 3 4x4. It's the return of the Grand Wagoneer, which we had one of these when I was 12. So we had an... Wow. My parents bought it. It was burgundy with the genuine faux wood paneling on the outside because, why would you
wouldn't want the fake faux wood paneling.
Right. You want the genuine faux wood. Yeah. So, and my mom loved that car. My mom is 5'1". So to get behind the wheel of a car that big, she suddenly feels like I own the road. She loved that thing. I think she probably cried when she got rid of it. She was really sad. So I actually took my mom out to lunch, who is now 84, and had to use a little step to get up because it's too high when you lower the ride height. She was in heaven. She's like, this is so much nicer. She was so excited to ride in this car. So I was super excited to be able to take her out for a drive in it and take her out to lunch. One of the things I noticed talking about that, the steps, so they have the deployable step. It's really wide, which is awesome. Because if you're using that because somebody's trying to get in, like somebody who's older or even kids, because you need to get, sometimes those steps are very tiny and they don't feel very secure. This is like, you can put your foot on this and like stand on it and both your feet are completely on it. Like your heels not hanging on the edge of the stuff. It's very
everything
wide.
About the Wagoneer is wide.
It's big. Yes. Yeah. Everything is wide. So I liked that feature. I thought that was kind of a neat feature that, until you've tried to get up onto a car or have to help somebody up or help kids up, you don't realize how a narrow step is really a pain in the butt, but a nice wide step makes it easier for everybody. Yeah.
Your foot slips off because it's like, like the you ball on your foot.
Yeah. And if you ever watched a kid go to step on it and they misjudge, and when they're really narrow, their foot goes through, like under. Yeah. Like I've seen kids do splits. It's So having a nice wide step plus one. So I really like that. As far as the power behind this thing, it is a 6.4 liter V8 engine with 471 horsepower and 455 pound-feet of torque. And it feels like this amazing beast when you drive it. If you mash that gas pedal on the highway because you're trying to navigate heavy traffic, it is just fantastic. It's not that like sports car acceleration that's aggressive and angry and like makes you, but it is like, get out of my way. It is so, it is so strong and so beefy. It's fantastic to drive this. It does, however, feel like you are taking not just your lane, but all the lanes. Like, nope, it's not my lane that's mine. This highway is mine. Move out of the way, every other lane in the highway. It feels huge, which can make it a little bit of a challenge in, you know, parking lots. I drove by many a parking space because I just thought, I don't even trust myself to be able to get into that spot. And then once I get in, I'm not entirely sure that I can get out because there's so little room left on either side.
You gotta get out to the trunk.
Right. Yeah. Just going to crawl out the hatchback, crawl over the two rows of seating behind you and like crawl out the back of the Grand Wagoneer. So it is big. So you have to be used to it being big. When they did this launch, they did it in New York City and they had us drive out in New York City. Oh, good.
Driving down the Hudson Parkway and that thing was nerve-wracking.
It was nerve-wracking. And, you know, it's just as, I mean, I'm, you know, in rural New Hampshire, it's just as nerve-wracking here when you get on the highway or get into narrower spots. It is, you have to be really comfortable driving a big car. Everything about this is big. If you're going to say one thing about the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, big, that would
be. Well, it's 4 inches wider than a Ford Expedition and about 3 inches wider than a Suburban.
Yeah. So, and those are not small.
Yeah.
So it is like, we will out-big everybody. Inside though, it out luxuries everybody. It is absolutely beautiful.
Well, it's grand.
It's grand inside. It has two like an extra screen. You get a screen as the front passenger where you can control select functions on the vehicle. It has wood trims. There's this nifty little, it's like metal thing that says Grand Wagoneer. And it's not like embossed, but like laid into the front on the dashboard where the wood is. There's wood on the center console. The leathers are beautiful and plush. There's all this contrast stitching. There is not a single spot that you look in this vehicle from the floor mats to the headliner that you don't think luxury car, luxury car, luxury car. Everything in this is absolutely beautiful. So on that front, if you're looking for a luxury SUV, it nails it. I mean, there's no doubt you feel that. And then of course it has the capability of a Jeep. This has got four-wheel drive. Now I did not, there is no way on God's green earth that I would take this car by itself without an OEM off-road at all. Because I feel like if I did any damage to it, like that scratch just cost you $10,000. Not doing that. But it does have the capability. We, you know, like what? There's a point where you're just like, I can't, wouldn't do it. And we have so much snow on the ground and mud. I feel like between the snow and mud, it's just a bad call in a Grand Wagoneer for me right now. But you could. I mean, you could if you wanted to. It definitely has a capability, which is kind of what makes this special. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to spend, just, you know, grand total, $108,800.
Oh, my God. That is way more than both of the cars I had. You could buy both. Wait, so both of the cars I had, let's say.
How much 40, were they together?
45, 66. Let's just go up to 70. Let's just round up to 70, maybe 75.
For the two of them? So you could
almost half again as much for more, a little more than that.
Yeah.
So, you know, completely different target markets. But so it's expensive. So you're paying a lot for it. I don't know how many people are going to buy this and are actually planning on off-roading in the weekend. I kind of feel like if you buy this, you actually also have a Wrangler and that's where you should go off-roading on the weekend.
Yeah. That's like the G-Wagon people.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot to recommend this.
If you need to go out on the, you know, in the back 40 of the estate, you know, to check something out.
You're going to shoot pheasants or something. Yeah.
You got to go check on that. You got to go check on your ranch hands.
Right.
Yep. Sure you don't want to, you know, I'm not going to get in the Jeep. It's dusty and messy.
I need the comfort.
I'm going to take this onto the little dirt roads and I'll know I'll be fine if I get stuck in a wash.
You know, and it's neat that they brought it back. I mean, I don't remember exactly when it was discontinued, but it's been a while. I mean, my parents brought theirs in 1982. So it's been
30 years. It was 1992 that they 92
when they said, okay, so it's been a while since it's been around. And, you know, the thing that I suppose will kill you now is the gas prices. Like suddenly to put the gas in this this would kill you. I don't have the fuel economy on. Oh, no, here we do. 13 city, 18 highway.
Well,
which, yeah, how much is it going to cost you to fuel this thing right now? Like, a lot. Oh my God, a lot.
What did you get two loans?
I drove the regular Wagoneer, not the grand one. So it only had the 5.7 liter Hemi in it to Indianapolis last October.
Only, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, on a 600 mile round trip highway drive, it, you know, it averaged just over 17.
Yeah.
Highway.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the 6.4, you're probably going to be lucky to hit 15.
Right. And I want to say, like, oh gosh, that's a big deal because gas prices are stupidly high right now. And who knows how long they're going to stay that way. But for the same token, you just spent $108,875 on
Maybe
this.
Maybe you're not the kind of person who worries about gas prices.
Yeah. Exactly. It's probably not something that's at the top of your list if you're spending that kind of money.
Whatever.
I mean, it's still not great. No one wants to spend more money, no matter how much money you've got. No one wants to spend extra, like, hey, it cost me $50 to gas up this week and last week, and now it's 105. Like, no one wants to do that. I mean, that's the big downside. But in terms of the capability, the style, the luxury, the comfort, it is absolutely beautiful. It's huge. We had a piece of furniture that we ordered 3 months ago. It had a 4 to 6 week delivery time frame. Thanks, COVID. So we finally have it and it came in. I'm like, it's the right week. Oh my gosh, the stars aligned. I don't have a convertible. I actually have the Grand Wagoneer. Backed it up to the little, you know, drop off pickup thing at the furniture store. And I thought, is it going to fit? And it, like, we could have put three of this like giant table inside of it. It's like, it fits. There's still room in the back seat. Okay.
What else can we buy?
Yeah. What else can we buy that they have in stock right now? So it's, you know, it has an incredible amount of room, roomy for passengers, roomy for cargo. And it's just, it really is a beautiful, quiet, comfortable ride. It has a little bit of that, you know, because it's gigantic. It has a little bit of that floaty kind of feel, you know? So it's, yeah. So you're kind of like, whoa, whoa. If you hit bumps, it's not bam. It's just, woo, and you sort of bounce.
That's 25,000 of the 108. It was just making feels like you're on a cloud.
Exactly. It's just to make you feel like you're on a cloud. So overall, I mean, I like the Grand Wagoneer. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know how many people just, I mean, I think you're buying it for status. I want a vehicle that says I can go off road. I really love the Jeep brand. I have 100K in my pocket to buy this and have this really super fancy vehicle to drive around with the kids and haul whatever I want to haul, maybe bark mulch, although I couldn't put bark mulch in that beautiful cargo area. But
it's the rich person who still wants to look a little country.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to get a G-Wagon because that's all elitist
that's too fancy pants. Wrong.
Yeah, last summer when they did the launch drive in New York, you know, they were talking about, you know, the market for this thing. And they said that 25% of Jeep sales in the U.S. are in the New York metropolitan area. So that whole, you know, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, a quarter of all the Jeeps bought in the U.S. are bought in that region, which is, you know, those people, they're not taking these things off road, even Wranglers. You know, they're buying, you know, Wranglers and Wagoneers and Grand Cherokees, and they're using them to shuttle the kids to, you know, to their fancy private schools and you know, go to their Pilates classes and
see LL Bean crowd. Is LL Bean still a thing?
It is.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Part of why they had done the drive in New York, because we all kind of sort of had the same questions, like, why are we driving this
giant thing?
Like, what are you? Well, that's the kind of person, is sort of the person who has, you know, a upscale person in this area who's going to take it outside the city and go to the country club or go to the go on a drive and go antiquing or whatever the heck it is you do when you have a $100,000 car. And, but this is the sort of lifestyle they will have. They won't necessarily be driving it downtown all the time. But you're going to drive it out and take it out, you know, on and away from the city with your family, with your friends. And that was why they chose to do it in New York City. That was their rationale.
So the family cabin that's like 5 bedrooms and has 3 fireplaces.
Exactly. That's bigger than both of our houses put together, Rob.
Exactly.
So we both just drove the Lincoln Navigator a couple of weeks ago, the Refresh 22 Navigator. Which would be your preference, the Navigator or the Grand Wagoneer?
Okay, that's a hard question because they're very inside. The Navigator has more of a traditional, like, I am a fancy pants luxury car, even just in the style.
My pants, they are fancy.
My pants, they're very fancy. Well, the Jeep is like, my pants are fancy, but they also have lots of pockets for cargo, you know? So it's
I also own a hatchet.
Right. I have a hatchet in my pants and a little loop thing. So I feel like it's a very different.
But you wouldn't want to leave it in there when you climb in. You wouldn't want to cut up those beautiful leather seats.
Cut up those beautiful seats. But I feel like they're very different. It's a very different customer. Lincoln is sort of a more refined, sort of elegant luxury, where Jeep is, it's still just as luxurious, but it feels a little bit more like you want luxury. You still want to make an impression. You're still saying you're driving a pricey car, but you're a little bit more down to earth is the vibe that you want. Like I'm not afraid.
So you're saying the Wagoneer is for the rich ranch owner, while the Navigator is for the yacht club member.
Yes. How's that? Yes. Okay. I think that's accurate.
I think that's
a different, or it's the person who imagines they are a yacht club member, or the person who imagines that they own a ranch, one way or the other. But yeah, it's a different vibe. And I also think, like, I don't know, the sort of cachet of the brand. Jeep has a really distinctive, it's a Jeep, you know, everyone has a certain impression of Jeep. Nobody has to think, I don't know what's Jeep about these days. Everybody knows Jeep. It's off-road. Uh-huh. It's fun. It's rugged. Lincoln, you're like, they're still around. Like, not everybody.
They make fancy, nice cars.
They're big in China.
They're big in China, but we're not in China. So, but you know, so I think it's a very different. It's an entirely different customer that's looking for one or the other. They both hit a very different part of a similar market. Different person.
Different rich people is what it comes down to.
Rich people fro show, but different rich people.
Okay. I had something completely different from any of this stuff. I also had a Kia, but I had the 2022 Kia Carnival SX Prestige.
Remember, it's Carnival because it's
sorry, the Carnival SX Prestige. you know, anybody who's been listening to me for any length of time knows that I am a big fan of minivans as family haulers. I think that they are, you know, unless you need to haul six kids and an 8,000-pound boat, or a horse trailer, you know, the minivan is always the better choice for hauling the kids. But just don't call this a minivan anymore. It's no longer a minivan. It's now an MPV, if you ask Kia, which, you know, is the same thing. Like the new Sienna that came out last year from Toyota, they have both gone in kind of the same direction with the design. The hood line is now more horizontal, more upright grille, so it looks a little more SUV-ish. You know, trying to get away from that stigma of, you know, the soccer mom minivan, which I think is ridiculous. You know, it's like, just forget about those stereotypes. If it fits your purpose, use it. You know, and I think, you know, the Carnival fits the purpose of a lot of families a lot better than an SUV does. You've got lots of room in there. You've got lots of cargo space in the back. I think, you know, behind the third row seats, you still have over 40 cubic feet. Because you've got that nice deep well in the back there. When you fold the rear seats down, when you get rid of the third row seats, you know, they flip back and fold down into that well. But when you're using those seats, you still have a really deep well. So even if you're carrying six or seven people, you still have room for lots of stuff back there, which is, you know, almost double what you're going to find in a lot of three row SUVs, maybe more in some cases. So, you know, I think that is excellent. I like the new design. You know, it fits in with kind of the new design direction that Kia has been moving, at least with their non-electric vehicles, you know, the vehicles like the Sorento and the Telluride. It's the one I have has the black painted wheels. It's the, what do they call it? Not Aspen Blue. Astra Blue, which, you know, when you look at it, it looks, you know, more gray with a hint of bluish green to it. But, you know, it's fine. I can live with that color. I would prefer something a little bolder shade of blue. And then it's got a Tuscan umber interior. So this is the Prestige. So it's got all the options in there. Really nice leather interior. The second row seats in this one, it has the executive seating in the second row. So you've got a pair of captain's chairs that can recline. They've got footrests that come up. So kind of like a first class, domestic aircraft seat. Very, very comfortable, very pleasant place to be. It's got the rear seat entertainment system, which is great. Lots of USB ports everywhere. And like most other modern Kias and Hyundais, the larger ones, it's got the USB ports that are on the inboard side of the seat back of the front seats. So they're really easy to access, really easy to get to for people in the second row. Only two sort of complaints that I have about this one. The front seats feel a little flat. I think what it is, when you look at them, they look like they have some notable side bolsters, but I think they're wider than most seats are. So when you're sitting in them, they feel kind of flat. You don't feel like you're getting much lateral support when you're going around corners. But they're otherwise fairly comfortable. And then the fuel economy, again, going back to, the current state of affairs with fuel prices, the fuel economy is not great. The EPA estimate is 19 city, 26 highway, 22 combined. I've been averaging about 20. It's been pretty cold this week, but 20 to 20 and a half is what I've been getting in mixed driving, which is not exceptional. And unfortunately, Kia does not yet offer any sort of electrified powertrain in here. So, the Sienna now comes standard with a Toyota hybrid powertrain, and it gets mid-30s fuel economy. The Chrysler Pacifica, which is the other one of the other main competitors in this segment, is available with a plug-in hybrid that gets you 32, 33 miles of electric driving range. And then after that, you're still in the mid-30s fuel economy for MPG. I'll be curious to see what Honda does with the Odyssey. It should be coming up for a redesign sometime in the next 12 months or so. And I would be surprised if they don't incorporate a hybrid powertrain in there of some sort. I actually wouldn't be surprised if, maybe for 2023, that Kia will probably add some sort of hybrid powertrain option to the Carnival. They already have a very good one that's in the, they've got a plug-in hybrid that's in the Sorento and some other models as well, which should have plenty of power. It's like 275 horsepower, I think, for the total for the plug-in hybrid system in the Sorento. This one is 290, the V6, the 3.5 liter V6 in here is 290 horsepower, 260 foot-pounds of torque. It's fairly smooth. They're driving on the highway. There was a little bit more wind and road noise, or mostly road noise, not so much wind noise, but road noise that was coming through than I would have expected. Not too terribly objectionable. You do have the sounds of nature available since it is a modern Kia. So you can always turn that on and get that, the sound of the Paris cafe or the crunching through the snow or the babbling.
Did you pick a sound to enjoy on your Carnival drive?
I switched around between a couple of different sounds.
It needs a Rio de Janeiro,
Yeah, that's true.
Carnival parade. That's what it needs. That's what it needs.
There's
some Latin jazz or something.
Yeah, some New Orleans carnival.
Yeah.
You could each have one that's like vehicle specific. Like you get something that makes sense for that vehicle.
That's a really good idea. Instead of just having the same set of five or six sounds across the entire lineup. You have like five standard ones and one that's specific to that model.
The Carnival and one that's for the EV6 and what? Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
I will have to share that information with the product planning team at Kia the next time I talk to them.
I think that's a good idea, Kia.
Yep. You can send your checks to Wheel Bearings.
Admin at wheelbearings.media.
There you go.
Otherwise, this is a great minivan. It's a great family hauler. You've got the dual sliding doors, they're power operated. All the things that we have come to expect in modern minivans are here. It's sharp looking, it's attractive. And it just it does what you need for a people hauler.
All in the folks.
The price. I didn't mention the price. The one I drove, as I said, is pretty much loaded. Came to $47,770, including an $1,175 destination fee. The base price on the Carnival, you can start off with the LX trim at just $32,300, so somewhat more affordable, although your color options are very limited with that one. But other than that, you know, it's the standard, the base vehicle is a very solid vehicle. It's a great people hauler. So
yeah, I'm a fan of it too. When I drove it, we had it, even to have a planned trip up to the White Mountains to go camping. And it was my husband and I, my daughter and all of our stuff. And it was great. It was actually nice it was a pretty lengthy road trip up there and it swallowed up all that stuff. No problem. So I was a fan. And then my friends that were with us, we ran out briefly for something. Well, let's take your car. Like, this is cool. This is a minivan. So they really liked it. So it was well. Right. Yeah.
I'm always trying to talk people into buying minivans instead of SUVs, especially people with kids. And it's always a pushback. You're like, well, I don't know. I'm like, no, minivans are cool. SUVs are basic. Minivan.
Yeah. I mean, with the sliding doors, you don't have to worry about kids opening up the door and banging it into the car next to them.
You're carrying a kid and you're walking up to the car. You can hit a button and the door opens. Can you do that in a Ford Escape? Nope.
Nope. And also you don't have to reach up as high. It's, you know, you've got a much bigger aperture to get in there and get the kids strapped into their seats and things like that. It's just way easier to handle.
Nice use of the word aperture, by the way.
Yeah. Plus one. Sam.
You're like plus 1%.
All right. Let's stick with the minivan theme for a moment. The long, long, long awaited return of the VW bus is almost back. It's almost here.
Almost here.
At least if you live in Europe. It's going to be a little bit longer here in North America. But this week, VW officially unveiled the production version of the ID Buzz. And I'm glad that they kept the ID Buzz name from the concept instead of just giving it some arbitrary
seven ID or eight or seven. 43.
Yeah. What's the other thing? Just like I put the, they're coming with just one number after stop. It was cute.
So the ID Buzz is here. They showed off the production version, which goes on sale in Europe late this summer. I think they start taking orders in Europe in May. And then deliveries start in late summer. For the European market, they are getting a shorter wheelbase two-row version of it. We're not getting it here in North America until early 2024, when we will get a slightly longer three-row version of it, because apparently Americans can't be satisfied with just, you know.
I would have been really happy with that short, but whatever.
Yeah. Interestingly, all of the photos that they have shown of this thing and the examples, the prototypes that they had, all have including even the cargo buzz version, the ID Buzz Cargo, all have the two-tone paint scheme with the white above and color down below. So the white in the front kind of swoops down to the front bumper. So it kind of evokes that look of the classic Type 2 bus, you know, from the 1950s, I think, when it originally launched, when they had the V coming down there. What do you guys think of the buzz?
Oh, it's horrible. No, I'm just kidding. I waited for a long time, and then I got very concerned when all the spy pictures were coming out, and people who you know, I know in the Bay Area, they were also very excited, and then they saw the spy pictures, and they were also concerned. And then now that they've shown it off, like, the design hasn't deviated too much from the concept. It still has that sort of flavor of the old vehicle. You know, you still have to deal with regulatory issues and stuff. You can't make something exactly, you know, old schooly. But no, I really like it. It'll be interesting. I do wish we were getting a shorter wheelbase here in the United States, because I think that would be perfect for my wife and I and our dogs and our cats. But you know, Americans want big cars, and Volkswagen's happy to, you know, make it larger and probably throw a larger battery in there. I
like it too. I think it's going to do very well. And, you know, you were talking about the stigma of a minivan and how minivans are, you know, dorky and horrible and awful. And it's like, but this isn't a minivan. This is a bus, you know? Yeah. So you're okay. You can get this. You've avoided the stigma. If you go
exactly.
The
yeah.
Bus. You have avoided
it. It's the cool
it.
Minivan.
Right. It's like, no, not the same thing. This is like the old Volkswagen bus. So you're okay. So
you're still cool, mom. You're still cool, mom.
And actually, if you're driving this, you're a cool mom.
Because
it's electric.
Right? So this is like, I have an electric car. It's not really a minivan. It only thinks it is. It's really cute. I think this is going to do well. Did we get pricing information on this? We didn't get
pricing.
No.
You have no idea.
We're all sad, though.
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
I think they're going to announce the pricing closer to May when they start sales, start the orders in Europe. I've heard rumors that it's going to be pretty pricey.
Sam, you and your rumors.
You know, it is electric, and it's bigger than an ID4, although it's using the same powertrain and battery from the ID4. So I would guess that the starting price is at a minimum going to be mid-40s here in the U.S., yeah. And loaded up, you're probably going to be looking, 60 plus.
That still makes it pretty competitive with, as long as it actually is competitive with comparable minivans, you're okay.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you factor in operating costs, it's going to be a little more expensive probably to buy than the comparable minivans, but it's going to be a hell of a lot cheaper to operate.
Exactly.
Because it's all electric. You're not going to have to worry about 20 miles per gallon from this thing. It's rear wheel drive, 201 horsepower electric motor on the rear axle. I would guess that for the U.S. and probably globally, they will probably offer an all wheel drive version as well with a front electric motor. Lots of room in this thing, because the battery and the little motor in the back there, so a nice flat floor. The interior, the infotainment is pretty consistent with the look of what you have on the ID3 and the ID4. Same type of, small digital cluster in front of the driver, the touchscreen in the middle. All the photos show, with the white trim around the cluster, in the front there. Hopefully they will, I would assume that for production, they will also offer black versions, because if you're going to haul family around in this thing, you probably don't want all that white trim in there.
Showing on the cargo version, they show them with black.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yeah,
the cargo version
has a black interior. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And there's a
And unfortunately, we will not get the cargo version here because chicken tax. They would have to pay a 25% tariff on it. So we'll only get the people hauler version. And one thing that has not been decided apparently yet is whether we will get the California camper version. So in Europe, they will have the option of the classic pop-up camper on the ID Buzz. During the presentation, there were two versions of the present. When they did the reveal earlier this week, there were two versions. There was the global version, the European version of that presentation, and then there was a shorter America-only version with Scott Kehoe, who's the president of VW of America. And he did reference the California camper, and he said, we'd like to hear from fans and, whether we should have that here. So I think that they're still trying to decide whether to offer it here. But that, that would be a very distinct selling point, that no other minivan offers, is to have that classic pop-up camper on this thing.
People are going to spend a lot of money on it. So this thing is, a lot of people have been waiting for this. And there are a lot of people with a lot of money who'd be more than happy to spend, to drop $110, $120 on a California camper version of this. Because the regular California camper version is just like $103 or something crazy, $103,000. And so they don't sell it in the United States. They just let us all drive it. I think they're going to be fine. I know that Volkswagen America is very, they're always a little concerned about bringing a car over, because they're like, we want to make sure it fits, and we sell a lot of them. I mean, Germany offered Volkswagen America the ID3, and they said all you have to sell is 20,000, and we'll let you have it. If you can tell us you'll sell 20,000 of these, 20,000 units, go for it. And they and Volkswagen America is very much like, well, we really want to come out with something that is, you know, that growth market, which is that crossover SUV. So I think, yeah. So I think they're going to be a little like, I don't know. But no, that's there's no way that is not going to be a winner. There's no way they're not going to have to, like, put people off for like 18 months in order to build it, because it's going to. Yeah. People in this country have a lot of money. Some of them, not me, but some people have a lot of money. They're more than happy to spend it on nostalgia and EVs and camping, because the van life thing is, it's a thing. And it's not, it's not going away post pandemic. I think I think people are like, oh, this is actually kind of nice. I don't have, you know, I have this thing that I can drive around when I'm in town, but then I can also just take it off for the weekend.
Well, I'm just glad that they're going to sell even any version of this thing here in North America, because it would have been really easy for VW to just say, nah, we don't need that here. We're not going to sell that many of them, but
it would have been a riot.
Oh, there would have been. I know there would have been a riot. People are. Yeah. I'm still angry about the Honda E. Okay, so and that doesn't have that didn't have like 20% of the excitement around it that the ID Buzz has. So I think, yeah.
One of the other features that will be standard on here is bidirectional charging, like you have on the Ford F-150. So it'll support, you know, if you have a DC wall box, bidirectional wall box in your garage, you can plug it in and you can power your house off of this thing if your power goes out, or, you know, in your campsite, you can plug stuff in and run it off of there. So that's very nice. And speaking of bidirectional charging, we had there was also an announcement this week from General Motors and PG&E that they're going to do a bidirectional charging pilot with a bunch of new GM EVs in Northern California, which is the area that PG&E serves. I don't know if I think they kind of dropped the Pacific Gas and Electric name and they just go with PG&E now. But they're going to start this summer with that in PG&E's labs. And this is one thing that GM hasn't talked about with their new EVs yet is bidirectional capability. Ford obviously made a big deal of it with the F-150 with their intelligent power backup, but GM hadn't really talked about it even when we asked them, you know, whether it would be there. So they're going to do some testing. And one thing that's different with what they're doing with PG&E is they're integrating this into what they call a demand response system. So with the F-150, with their system, if you have that smart inverter from Sunrun in your garage and it's plugged in, it's got a transfer switch in there. So if your power goes out, the transfer switch automatically switches over. So it disconnects your home circuitry from the grid when the power goes out, and it starts pulling power from the battery in the truck and powering everything. But it's all done locally. It's all controlled locally. What GM and PG&E are doing, same basic idea. You've got this inverter and transfer switch, but it can also be, in addition to being controlled locally, it can also be controlled remotely by PG&E. And, you know, certainly I'm sure you've had experience this, Robbie. You know, PG&E's had a lot of problems, you know, with during hot periods with having too much power demand and having to go to rolling blackouts and things like this. And what they want to be able to do is, you know, for people that have this demand response system set up, they can automatically switch them off the grid, and they, you know, they can retain power, but they can reduce the load on the grid by, you know, taking a few thousand or, you know, tens of thousands of homes off the grid for a period of time, running them off their EVs. And they control that from, you know, from their end, not locally at your home. What do you think about that?
Okay. So first of all, it's PG&E, which there is no love for PG&E in Northern California, to be fair. I mean, a lot of the fires that have happened up here, PG&E's fault, because PG&E didn't, you know, they're like, oh, we're not going to cut down trees. We're not going to do the maintenance that's needed. They've been cutting costs in order to make sure that, you know, they're making a lot of money for years, and now it's biting them on the ass because now they're having to pay, you know, these huge settlements, which we have to pay for, by the way. The consuming, our energy costs go up because they lost a huge lawsuit because they burned down a town and then another town and then another town. And it's, you know, so it's on that end, I'm just like, on the other, you know, I'm sure there's probably going to be something you have to opt into. And if you opt into it, yeah, I mean, if they can make it work. PG&E recently said they're going to start burying their electric lines, which is something people have been asking for decades for. So those electric lines don't get, you know, blown over in the wind, hit a tree, and then burn down hundreds of thousands of acres. So they're doing that. So they're going in the correct direction. I think this is part of that. I like the idea of bi-directional charging. Your house doesn't use nearly as much energy as your car does. You know, and if I can set it up my own, like right now I have a level 2 charger. We charge the car between midnight and 3 p.m. That's off peak here. And then from 3 p.m. to like midnight, it's peak charging, or it's peak power. You know, you're paying like almost double for electricity. Mm-hmm. If I could charge my car at night, and then when peak happens, I can pull my, you know, I can start pulling power from my vehicle. Let's say I buy that Volkswagen Buzz, that ID Buzz, you know, has 84 kilowatts, which is more than I'll ever use in my house. I'm not driving there every day. You know, I work from home. You know, my wife takes the other car to work. If I can charge, you know, I'm essentially saving money because instead of paying double double the price for electricity, I'm paying off peak, you know, prices for electricity for my home. So it's, yeah, I think it's good. And also if you can help, you know, if we can reduce, you know, blackouts, because a blackout is, you know, it's inconvenient for me. It's horrible for people who need medical equipment in their home. It's horrible for hospitals, and it's horrible for people who actually need to have their electricity on for a variety of reasons. For me, if it power goes out, I'm like, oh no, I hope everything's charged. It is. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I think it's a cool idea, but as long as they allow people to opt into it, I think the idea of them just saying, nope, we're making this power decision for you, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, I think most people would opt into it. Most people are buying EVs. You know, I don't see this. There people are going to be like, oh, no, but it's PG&E. That's the...
Yeah.
It really comes down
literally,
to...
I'm on the East Coast, and I think of them as the company that starts all the fires. That's literally how I think
yeah,
of them.
That's their brand is, yeah, we burn things down.
We start fires by accident. Oops. Yeah.
Oops. We're not good at what we do. We have one job, and we're not good at it.
Not good at it.
Yeah, so GM's going to start the testing in PG&E's labs this summer, and then by the end of the year, they plan to expand the pilot to consumers. And they're also, a couple days after the GM announcement, they announced that Ford is also going to participate in this, so they'll be using the F-150 Lightning as part of this as well for the demand response. So
cool.
That should all be kicking off before the end of the year. All right. Staying with EVs some more, Honda and Sony have signed a memorandum of understanding to look at potentially forming a joint venture to maybe make EVs.
A memorandum of understanding. It's a plan to make a plan.
Exactly.
It's an idea. It's a letter that we to plan to have a plan. Hey, so you want to do something? Yeah, maybe we'll do something later. Yeah, that sounds like – it's like when you and your friends are like calling each other. Hey, we should go out and get some lunch sometime. Yeah, that sounds great. We should. And yeah. Then you leave.
And you don't find anything.
Yeah, so Sony has shown two different EV concepts at CES in 2020 and then another one this year. The 2021 was a sedan. This year they showed an SUV. It was never clear if Sony actually really wanted to get into the business of – building cars, or they were just using this as demonstrators to show off all of their various technologies that they'd like to sell to car companies. And apparently, you know, Honda is interested in maybe taking that and turning it into a real product. So we'll see. Honda's first new EVs are coming in North America, coming courtesy of General Motors in 2024. the Honda Prologue, and an as yet unnamed Acura crossover based on GM's Ultium platform. But looks like they're going to potentially throw in their lot with Sony as well.
So I talked to Sony after the 2020 CES, where they showed off the vehicle again. And they told me, I'm like, are you making this car? And they're like, nah, we're not going to make this car. And then they turned around and told someone else that they were going to make the car. And I was just like, what is going on with them? And now they're going to, but they're not. Well, maybe we'll make it. Maybe we won't. It's all very, I'm like, okay, fine. Just do whatever you're going to do. But
it's like the most tentative of maybe, I don't know, possibly happening kind of plans.
Yeah.
They I mean, if they get into it and they can make a nice car and they're working with Magna or they're working with Honda or they're working with GM or Volkswagen or whoever, great, that's fine. If you can make a nice EV that people want and, I don't know, maybe have a Walkman in it, that's great. maybe it comes with a PlayStation 5.
Yeah, the first EV with a cassette player.
Yeah.
wired headphones.
Some wired headphones.
The little orange foam.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Flashback. That was very specific.
I'm too old. All right. Well, we'll see what happens with Honda and Sony. Rivian made some more news this week, which did not impress a lot of people, apparently.
They made any good news for months. Nothing happy is coming
out. We made some cool cars, and everyone's like, yay, we love these trucks. They're like, all right, hold on.
Wait, we're just going to mess everything
up. We only made a few of them, though. They had their Q4 earnings call this week. And let's see. In Q4 of 2021, they lost about 1.1 Q4 versus previous $2.5 billion in losses in Q4. And that's a lot of money.
That is a lot.
And they are projecting for this year, for 2022, that they're going to lose $4.75 billion. Yeah. Turns out their factory in Illinois has theoretical capacity for 50,000 vehicles a year. They are currently projecting that they're only going to produce 25,000 vehicles this year.
Oh, my gosh.
And that includes the Amazon delivery vans.
That includes the vans.
That's their total production.
25,000. Oh, so people are going to... Yeah.
83,000 reservations and less than 50,000 people will get an actual vehicle.
Yeah, well, less than 25,000.
Less than 25,000, sorry. We'll get, oh my gosh.
So it'll probably be on the order of somewhere between 15 and 20,000 of the R1T and R1S, and then the rest will be the delivery vans.
So they had a whole bunch of people cancel when they first did their whole, it's not going to cost what you think it cost. Oh, wait, we're backpedaling. And now they have, hey, we're not going to make what we thought we were going to make. Did you feel like as a Rivian, if you're like holding an order, you'd be like, you know what? Enough. I've been burned once. Let's burn twice. Am I ever going to get a car?
It still beat the Cybertruck to market, though.
That's true. That's true. It was the first electric pickup truck.
But I feel like with Rivian, you had that expectation that it would happen. With Tesla, you're like,
I don't know.
You know what you were getting into when you went with Tesla. There was no doubt. It's like, you might get a truck, maybe, this year. Who knows? With Rivian, like, we are going to build a truck, and you believed them.
Yeah.
I listened to the earnings call, and they talked about they're having trouble getting some of the parts from suppliers. It's the whole supply chain challenge. Everybody's having a hard time getting parts, and if you can't get parts, you can't make vehicles, and if you can't get all the parts, you can't ship them to customers, especially if it's an EV. You need all those chips in there for an EV. So they're struggling a bit with production. So it's not the same kinds of problems that Tesla had. Tesla was just with the launches of everything they've built, they've had trouble just putting them together. They were able to get the parts, they just couldn't put it together right. Rivian just can't get the parts they need.
Yeah.
And that's a real issue. So far through May 8th, they have produced 2,425 vehicles since last September or so when they started production, which is not a lot.
It's not a lot of vehicles.
Yeah. I mean, Ford, each of Ford's F-150 plants cranks out 50 trucks or 60 trucks per hour.
Jesus.
So 120 an hour between two plants.
I understand. That sounds really close. The difference doesn't seem very big at all.
No, no, not at all. So if you're waiting for a Rivian, you're probably going to be waiting a while longer.
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe.
Consider buying an EV6 in the meantime, though.
Yeah, get an EV6 or something. Get a Ford Maverick in the meantime.
There you go. Just a little Maverick.
Drive it around. They'll tide you over until you have to get you, and then until your Rivian shows up. It gets pretty good. It gets good gas mileage.
Yep.
Yeah, just get that instead for while you wait. Anyway, and then at the end of the year, you know, and then in like a few years,
you can sell the Maverick and buy your Rivian.
You'd probably be able to sell the Maverick at a profit.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. If the supply chain still keeps doing, it'll probably, yeah. Or, you know, even if you don't sell at a profit, you got a good little truck for $20,000.
Yeah.
Of course, that might not show up to your house for 6 months. So maybe, I don't know. I hope you just weren't waiting for that car as your only car.
Yeah, that's pretty much the deal. Just don't be waiting on that with any sense of urgency whatsoever.
Yeah.
Speaking of not waiting with a sense of urgency, hope you weren't waiting for a new generation Subaru WRX STI. Apparently not going to happen.
I love the STI. I love the WRX. I'm a big fan of both of those vehicles.
So today you're crying big tears then.
Yeah. The gas-powered one. So if they can deliver an EV STI that drives like the STI, that's it. I don't care then. You know, they killed the gas-powered STI and they deliver like something that's just as good, but it's run electrons. Go for it.
Or not under the hood, as long as it drives the way an STI should drive.
Yeah, the STI, the all-wheel drive system, the handling, everything about the WRX and STI are just, for me, this is the kind of car that I absolutely adore. Just I can just take it anywhere, do anything, and it's just going to be like, yeah, let's do this. Let's party. I drove the last, current generation, the final generation of gas STI, and I was, the only thing that sucked is that it's not a wagon.
It wasn't brown.
You know what?
On an STI, you don't need brown. You need that blue, the classic.
Bright blue.
You need the blue.
Rally blue.
So you can see the brown. So people know that you're legit because you've got all the mud on it.
Yeah, you don't want the brown, the dirt just blending in.
Yeah. You want people to know. You know, just completely aside, I'm always concerned about people who buy the WRX and the STI and then they lower them. I'm like, what are you doing?
This is a rally car.
No, you're doing it wrong. There's so many other vehicles you could buy and lower. But you know, it's your car. Do what you want. Don't listen to me. But at the same time, it breaks my heart just a smidge.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Solterra drives. I think that'll be an interesting indicator of maybe where Subaru, what Subaru might be able to achieve with the STI, and to see if there's any difference in the way the Solterra behaves from the Toyota BZ4X. Because from what I've been told, Subaru actually did most of the development on this vehicle.
Oh, that's
good. So it's more Subaru than it is Toyota.
Huh, interesting.
All right. That'll be fun. I was unable to go drive it because of conflicts. I'm very excited about the Solterra and to see what happens. And it's easier to say than whatever the Toyota thing is called.
Yeah.
That I've completely forgotten every time I say BZ4X, right?
Yeah.
So it's like Beyond Zero four times. I guess that's the only way I can remember.
That's for
four-wheel drive.
Remember it. That'll work. Beyond Zero.
Or no, sorry. The number is kind of the indicator of where it fits in the range size-wise. So the BZ5 will be larger.
Bigger.
BZ3 will be smaller.
I want to get the BZ1.
The X is for crossover.
Yeah, what's the BZ1?
Like a little key.
We don't know yet.
It's just like a two-seater.
Yeah, might be. Might be the electric.
It's the Mr. 2
GR86.
It's the Mr. 2, the MR2.
There you go.
Mr.
2.
Give us a Mr. 2, electric Mr. 2.
Mr. 2.
Okay. before we get into questions, I just want to let people know, if you're listening to this early this week, if you are in Austin and you're going to South by Southwest, make sure you come by the convention center on Thursday afternoon at 1:30 Central Time, I think it is, in Austin. I will be on stage interviewing Peter Rawlinson, the CEO and CTO of Lucid Motors. So if you're around, or if you're watching, if you're doing the online version of South By this year, you can check that out online as well. So make sure you check it out.
Awesome. This should be good. Peter's an engineer, and you're an engineer. So if you're like a nerd, this is going to be a good talk. Every time I talk to Peter, it's like, you know, it's less like media training and more like nerdery. And so he's a fun interview.
Yeah, well, and also this week Lucid launched a video series called Tech Talks on YouTube. And the first one is like 35, 40 minutes long. And it's all Peter going through explaining, you know, their approach to efficiency and how they designed the batteries and the motors and everything on the Lucid Air. And there's some math in there. He's got a table that's a whiteboard, and he's doing the equations on there, explaining how they came up with the size and everything.
The minute you give an engineer a whiteboard and post-it notes, it's all over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's got post-it notes, too.
Yeah, you got to have those stuck in between to create your flow chart in different colors, depending on where you are in the flow chart.
Absolutely. All right. Let's answer some questions from the listeners. Corey Wallace asks, love the podcast. What are your thoughts on skipping out of getting extended warranty on new vehicles to save money? I've had multiple vehicles and never used the warranty, and I'm thinking of buying a new 2023 Kia Niro PHEV when it comes out this fall. What do you guys think about extended warranties?
I've never bought one in my whole life ever.
I get a lot of calls about them, like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Emails too.
Well, I used to get a lot of calls about them before I got before Google enabled automatic call screening on Pixel phones. So now all that stuff just goes straight to the spam folder. It never even rings my phone.
I've never gotten. I have
your
paid
warranty
for, like,
is about to expire.
Yeah,
on a car I haven't owned for 10 years.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I've gotten the. I have gotten the thing where you pay and like you can bring it into and get it serviced for free, like the extra money. So you just
you're prepaying for maintenance.
Yeah, I have done that once. I did that on the lease for our Fiat. That way we just, you know, because we were, you know, my wife was in school, I was working, we lived in San Francisco at the time, so we didn't have a lot of money. So I was just like, if I just pay for it now. And then while I'm traveling, my wife needs to take it in. There's no like surprise. Oh yeah, we can even rotate the tires, and that was $100. And now we gotta change it. It was like So that was. I don't think it was worth it, like monetarily wise, but I think peace of mind, just getting it done, and not having a surprise. You know, was nice. But yeah, extended. I don't know. I've never gotten an extended warranty.
I don't know that there was.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those. You know, when you go to a dealer, when you're buying a new car. More often than not, you know, those extended warranties are not coming from the manufacturer. These are third-party warranties that, you know, it's being done by some other company. There's usually a lot of details. You got to look over the contract really carefully and see how much of a deductible, what's actually covered.
Yeah.
You know, these things are generally extremely profitable for dealers. Which is why they, you know, probably the longest part of buying a car is the time you spend in the F&I office, going through all that stuff. You know, as you're signing your paperwork, you know, they're trying to sell you all these other extra insurance and warranty things.
The tracker is the one they try to get us to get on our Kia. And I was like, no. They're like, well, and they just kept lowering the price. They're like, how about $250? I'm like, no. And then we got home and the Hyundai. And then the Hyundai app, you can track your car with the Hyundai app. So,
yeah.
And I was like, well, what if it gets stolen? I'm like, that's what I have insurance for. I don't care if the car gets stolen. I'm like, fine, it's gone. Who cares? That's why I'm paying insurance. It's not a classic car.
I had to do a ton of stuff with that. I wrote for Car Talk for a while for their blog, and they did a lot with what extended warranties do and what they include and what they don't include, and the ones that are well received by the public and the ones where people feel like, no, I'm getting taken for a ride. If you really want to look, I mean, I don't have links, I don't have it, but Car Talk, if you Google it, they have extensive deep dives on what they each offer, which ones they recommend and don't recommend, and just what exactly you're getting for your money and sort of the kind of things to look out for. I'm not a big fan of them as a rule, but like I just little shout out to Car Talk. If you go Google them and look on their site, you will find a ton of information because you are getting them from third parties. And there's a lot of third parties who offer them that you can buy within X number of, you know, weeks of buying your new car. You can add it on, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, definitely worth
it. If you can send me a link.
Let me see if I can find something. I'll see if you can make, because Car Talk really did a ton with that. So,
okay. James Gardner asked about our thoughts on the RIP STI. Just sold my 15 last year and looked like it was the last. It looks like it's the last of the models. We already talked about that. Dan Vesma asks, and based on the context here, I'm going to guess that Dan does not live in the U.S. Probably lives in Europe.
X-Type diesel.
Or the UK. Have four older cars: a '91 Mercedes 190E for the love, an 04 X-Type diesel for the commute, a 98 Discovery for the kids, Discovery 2 for the kids and the dogs, and a slow arse 04 Mini 1, which was another one that was never sold here. Yeah, that's the base Mini. 1.4 auto for my wife who can't drive a stick. Is there a PHEV out there that could replace them all?
We have five cars. One.
That's a lot of, yeah.
Three, four. Four cars. Yeah. Four cars. That's a lot.
You
want to
replace them with one. I think there's some options in there. I don't know how many kids you've got, what size of dogs you've got. You know, I mean, if you've got a couple of, a Mastiff or a Bernese Mountain Dog, some of these suggestions might not necessarily work. Or if you've got three or more kids, that could also be problematic. I was thinking about it earlier as I was writing this stuff up. The Toyota RAV4 Prime, I think, is a great option. You got lots of cargo space in there. The Peugeot 3008 is also available with a plug-in hybrid. Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid. If you need something a little bigger, depending on what your budget is, based on the fact that these are all older cars, I'm not sure if you can swing a Volvo XC90 plug-in hybrid, but that's another option to consider. That's on the larger size. The VW Touareg R e-hybrid, also a plug-in. Or if you really need extra space, Ford offers the Tourneo Custom with a plug-in hybrid option. So that's their mid-size van. It's in Europe, the Transit vans are all the vans called Transit are cargo versions. So Transit Custom, Transit Connect, the little one, the Transit Custom, and then the big Transit. The passenger versions are branded as Tourneo. So the Tourneo is kind of the mid-size, smaller than Transit, bigger than the Connect. That's also available as a plug-in hybrid. So if you need lots and lots of space, that's probably your best option in Europe.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with the RAV4 Prime.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of that one. I like it.
As long as you can get one.
If you can get one, it's hard to go wrong.
Yeah.
That's a good call. The ones that are sitting there.
X-Type diesel. Wow.
Yeah.
We should be friends.
You're still stuck right there. He's like,
you should be. Well, I have the X-Type gas.
I don't think they ever offered the diesel here.
Nah, they didn't offer the diesel. They only sold like a few wagons and a few manuals on the 2.5. I have the 3-liter sport, the all-wheel drive one. There weren't a lot of them. And the ones that were here were either my father-in-law bought it. There's a few people who bought them, but a lot of them were like Ford employees, because it was part of the you could get it. So you could look a little fancier than just driving around in a Taurus or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Dave Marsh asks, is it me getting older or are headlights just incredibly bright on new cars? I find the way they wash out my night vision and make my older car headlights near useless with oncoming traffic. I have a couple of vehicles of all heights, so it's not just a driver elevation thing.
Oh, yeah. They're way brighter than they used to be.
Yeah, definitely. And there's different kinds. Everyone had halogen headlights once upon a time, and now you don't necessarily, and they get brighter and...
And also, LEDs.
If you swap out your halogen headlights for like an LED converter, you can actually make them blindingly bright by accident. It breaks all kinds of rules.
Yeah.
Because the reflectors aren't the right way. So you can get a kit that'll do it, but you're not supposed to because that kit isn't designed to work with the reflectors and such in your existing headlight assembly. And it was fine with halogen bulbs, or if you got new halogen bulbs, but you put an LED in there and you blind the bejesus out of oncoming traffic, which it looks smart to you as the driver, but it's killing the person across from you. So that's also a problem.
Also, there's more and more people just driving around with their brights on. What I live in San Francisco. I live in the suburbs now, and there's no reason ever in most of these areas for you to have your brights on. There's no reason in a city to have your brights on ever, unless you get lost and you're in the middle of like the warehouse district and you're the only car around.
The only time I ever use them is like when I'm out in the middle of nowhere here. Like most of the time, even in New Hampshire, I don't have them on. It's just when I really get off to a side road, it's like, okay, I am in the deep, dark depths of the wilderness here. I need my high beams.
And they're just driving around with their brights on. You flash them, they don't care. They're just like, I don't care. I'm like, if you can't drive without your high beams on, you shouldn't be driving. That's the rule.
That makes sense. In rural areas,
feelings, Robbie.
in rural areas, you know, it definitely makes sense to drive with your high beams on. Especially if you live someplace like around here or New Hampshire, where you've got lots of animals, deer,
a lot
and stuff
of
like that. Might be crossing the road in front of you, or wild turkeys. You want to see those things as soon as you can. Other than that, most of the time you shouldn't need them. Fortunately, most modern cars have auto high beams anyway. So, they should automatically switch down to low beams as soon as they detect, oncoming vehicles. And then NHTSA did just finally approve a change to the headlight regulation allowing adaptive headlights. So we're going to start seeing those coming to market, in the next year or so. And even some vehicles that are already on the road, like Audis and some others, already have the hardware in place for adaptive high beams. So they might actually be able to get software updates that enable that so that it'll automatically dim the lights, so you'd have high beams on all around the cars that are approaching, but dim the lights right, on the car itself so you don't blind other drivers. So can do all kinds of other cool stuff as well.
Fancy stuff.
Yeah. All right, last one from Al Beck. He asks about the impact of the Ukraine war on the auto industry. Will this impact the U.S. market? Which automakers are most exposed? On the last part, I think
Volkswagen perhaps, Group.
Yeah, Volkswagen. Apparently, a lot of their wiring harnesses are built at a factory in the Ukraine, and they've had to pause a lot of production right now because they can't get their wiring harnesses. But more generally, the other big things, the two main things that are going to be an impact, because there's not a lot of auto parts built in the Ukraine or in Russia. The two main things are supplies of palladium, which predominantly come from Russia, and that's used extensively in catalytic converters. So you may find it, we'll probably see thefts of catalytic converters going up. As those prices go up. And then with Ukraine, about 60% of the neon gas that's used globally is produced in the Ukraine. Neon is not generally used directly in automotive production, but it is used for the lasers that are used for making semiconductors, making chips. So as if we didn't have enough problems with chip production, a lot of the neon that's used in chip production is going to be unavailable for a while. So that's it for this week. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.